and welcome to Tabletop Game Talk On Topic, a show where we talk about tabletop gaming topics of all kinds. I'm one of your hosts, Josh.
I'm Kitty.
And I'm Chris.
Today we'll be getting listener feedback on Keyforge, Organized Play, Introverts and Extroverts, our $250 gift game collections, holiday questions, and resolutions. I have a new resolution, and that is to not wait so long before a feedback episode.
And yeah, that's a lot of topics that we have there. Okay, but first we're going to thank our patron friends of the show, Emil Diljam, George Gia, Adam Harrison, the SGC, and Thomas Accioretti. Also, a thank you to our newest patrons, Barry Peterson and Ben Gari. And a huge thank you to all of our other patrons as well. So Josh, I don't know if you were listening, but we recorded our first Dice Tower News episode this week.
I'm so excited for you guys, and I still haven't listened to it, like a terrible friend. But that's so cool. Okay. How did it go?
I thought it went all right.
Yeah, it went pretty well.
Nice.
We sounded like we knew what we were doing.
Yeah. And then I read the reviews for the other hosts that have been trying to take it over for the last year, and they're not friendly.
No.
I'm a little afraid of the Dice Tower News listeners. So I'm putting out a call to our friends. Please go over, listen to Dice Tower News, listen to the podcast, and leave a review so that it makes us feel good, because our precious egos really can't take criticism. We only need fake positive feedback, please.
Yes.
I love that.
Yeah.
So. We are shamelessly asking, begging for please positive comments.
Yeah, they like us. They'll help us out.
Please. And David and Aaron, they left us comments in BGG about, the Kickstarter episodes are going away. Don't worry. The Dice Tower News episodes are sort of the same thing. I guess Kitty and I are a little bit more, I don't want to say robotic, but a little bit more newsy.
We're more newscaster.
Yes. Yes.
But we're newscasters now.
Yeah. We're important and stuff. But it is just us. So there's nothing else on that feed. It is just Kitty and I. Every Friday, there will be an episode of us. So if you really want to hear more of us, I have no idea why you'd want to do that. But if you really did, just go subscribe to Dice Tower News, and that's what you'll get. Just Kitty and I talking about cool stuff. And our Kickstarter segment on that is at the very end, where we kind of let ourselves come out a little bit more. We're making that more of like an opinion piece as opposed to a news piece, because with Kickstarters, it's all opinion. But
so true.
Yeah. But for the first few segments, we basically just cover the news, new games. We cover the BGG hotness, some headlines that are like, hot for the week or within the last couple of weeks, depending on when we find them. I find this interesting because we have to actually research stuff, and that's like a totally different thing. So maybe we'll do a topic on how we put the Dice Tower News together.
Ooh, we should.
I think that'd be cool. It won't be, we still have to kind of settle into the show, but I think maybe in a few weeks
we have to figure out how we actually do it.
Yeah. I think in a few weeks that'd be an interesting one to do, because it does give me kind of an insight into just news reporting in general, because there's so much stuff out there. You can't report on everything, so you have to pick and choose. Right. And how do you do that? Like, we're not even covering like super important things, but still, like, what Kickstarter do we cover, right? It's like, we don't want, so I don't know. It's interesting. All right. So, but we're not here to talk about Dice Tower News right now, except for please leave us a review over there at that channel. That would be amazing. It just really would be. So let's start covering some topics, shall we? Or covering some feedback from some topics. Our first topic that we get to cover, and I'm so excited about this, is Keyforge. I should mention that I came in first at another Keyforge sealed deck tournament this weekend. So
yeah, this was at my local game store.
It was. There was.
But I wasn't there.
You weren't. Yeah, there were 32 people. We all opened up a random deck, and then we played just three rounds. So there were actually four people that came in 3-0. Like, that's technically five. There was a scheduling snafu, so somebody, we had an extra 3-0 winner, but it was pretty fun. And that makes four sealed deck tournaments that I've come in first in. So
I'm gunning for you.
Yeah.
I wasn't there because I'm in such a rigorous Keyforge training regimen that I couldn't break it. So
I hear Aya the Tiger playing in the background.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, just don't let it go to your head, Chris, okay? Because, these people, these champions, they just let it go to their head, and then they don't train so hard. So you gotta keep sharp.
I'm actually thinking of retiring. I think undefeated. I'm good. time. We actually played a game of Homeworlds at the restaurant today because I'm like, let's play something different just to see if we still can play different games. And we can. It was still fun. So.
Oh, good.
Nice.
All right, let's get to some feedback. So Cindy, she says that she used to play Magic the Gathering and Pokemon in college and beyond, and she still has all her cards. All the KeyForge podcasts have made her seriously consider trying it, even though she swore off CCGs, which is collectible card games for those who are in the know. That was my newscaster voice. Regarding KeyForge being the first entry into a new game category, I'm going to start name-dropping UDG, which is Unique Deck Game, I believe, and see if it sticks. Time, Amazon, and fate, like Amazon, will tell if you end up buying a couple of decks to stuff stockings with. So this was obviously a while ago. This was before Christmas. So Cindy, let us know if you actually ended up buying a couple of these. But yeah, I like this.
Yeah, it's interesting because I feel like, you know, she's pointing out here that, like, you know, all the podcasts are getting her in the mood to actually play it. It's clearly like the hype is building over this one. I mean, I'm intrigued to see just how big it could get. But I can see Cindy getting it. I think she'll probably break at some point.
Yeah, the first tournament I was in, there were 8. Next one was 8, then 18, then 32. So, I mean, it's going upwards and people are like traveling to go to these things. So,
yeah, you encountered the same person at 2 of your tournaments.
Yep. And
like
that's
an hour apart.
Yep. So.
All right. We've got some feedback from Trevor Davis. One thing Kitty said that I wanted to reply to had to do with her fear of snobbery. I think that it is legitimate to fear that in KeyForge, but not because of the game. It is a risk with certain type of gamers who tend to bring it with them wherever, whatever game they play. Some games draw these folks like magic, and I see why KeyForge would spark that fear because the similarities are high. Same creator, so expected. My experience, though, has been that it really is a person thing instead of a game thing. I just try to apply lots of those gaming with strangers techniques when I get into those situations, and then do my best to be wiser before getting into that situation.
Yeah, I do find that this, especially in a competitive environment, which a lot of times Magic is in, people sit down and they want to win, myself included, right? So at the beginning, the conversations I have with my opponent are kind of like very shallow. I try to be a little bit humble. It's like, yeah, I don't know, this deck doesn't seem all that great, but we'll see how it does. At the end, after I beat them, then I have to be all nice about it and be like, oh man, you just got a, like, yeah, I just got a really lucky draw. I don't know how that happened.
Yeah, I know. It's such a stretch for you to be nice, Chris.
Well, but then we end up talking about like the game in general, right? And then once you start having that common thing to talk about, real personalities can come out. Now, every once in a while, you have someone who's just kind of salty for losing and that they're harder to talk up to. But that's okay, because there's plenty of other people to play with, hopefully. And yeah,
that works. I mean, you know, I think it's one of those things, like you say, in a competitive environment, like you got to expect it a little bit. But, you know, you learn how to deal with these kind of people eventually.
Yeah. And in a non-competitive environment, they are super, super friendly. I found that with Dice Masters as well. Like even in a competitive environment there, because it was smaller, everyone wanted to be friendly to everybody else because you wanted to bring more people in. So I think in KeyForge, we are still in a situation where people want to bring people in. So they're still in that friendly mode and we haven't pulled in a lot of the hyper-competitive people. So we'll see how that plays out over time.
Nice. All right, well, we got something from Patrick Foster. He says, I love the idea of KeyForge because I am not a one-game gamer. I like to play many different types of games and buy/try new stuff, call it the new style, I suppose. People that are heavily invested in the meta of Magic and the world of Magic probably only have time and money enough to be involved in that one game, or they're going to be left behind. With KeyForge, I think I could have fun and be somewhat competitive without having to invest all my time or a substantial amount of money to the game.
I hear this from so many people, almost the exact same thing, is that I don't want to invest all my time and money into one game, but I'd still really like to get into something that feels like that really fun dueling card game. KeyForge seems to really fit that. It seems to have really found a niche that was looking to be found.
Yeah, like nobody knew that it was even needed.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think one of the interesting things that just kind of hit me today when I was teaching some friends is KeyForge is the game that is, it's a competitive card game, and I would be more than happy to build decks all day long if it were just me. But if I'm playing somebody who's not, building those same decks or not putting that same investment in, I don't have anyone to play with still because I'm, you know, it was like the Dice Master situation, right? I'm studying the game and building up all the master stuff. And then Kitty sits down like, I just want to have fun. I'm like, oh, but now I have this master killer deck and, you know, there's no way you're going to be able to beat me. It's not fun for either of us in that situation. With Keyforge, here's a deck. All right, we'll play each other. Oh, I just kicked your butt. Well, let's switch decks. And then you play with the deck I just played. And, you know, it just, it
and you
feels...
still kick my butt. Yeah. It...
But it still feels like you can, anybody can just drop in and play, right? Because nobody, the meta knowledge that you need to play this game isn't as high as it is for other games.
It's true. Especially if you're playing in a really friendly environment where you're willing to give someone a lot of time to take their turns, a lot of time, like, go ahead, study your hand, read your cards, look at what mine are, ask me to see my cards. I don't mind really, like, setting that up, and maybe not a tournament because that's, you know, you do have a time limit. You have to play in such amount of time. But a lot of game stores are doing like open play nights. It's been a really friendly environment, everything that I've been to. So,
yeah. And one of the things I like to do with Keyforge is just let people rewind their turn if they want to. If you play a card out of order, it's like, oh, I should have played this first. I'm like, then you did play that first and you're going to get the effect that would have happened. Because until some random event happens, I have no influence on anything that's happening anyway. So it's just kind of a waste of time to say you have to focus on everything and make sure your turn is perfectly planned out before you do anything.
Yeah.
All right. So Ben says, I also wanted to share my experience with my first Keyforge organized play event, which I guess ties in with episode 120 as well. Yeah, Keyforge and organized play. Go figure. I did that on purpose, actually. On the whole, it was very good fun. It was a sealed auction format, so everyone bid chains for the decks they wanted. I just bid one change for a deck that no one else competed for, but some people started with 7, 8, or 9 chains. And for the more hotly contested decks, let's see, the format was a lot... Well, they bid up to 9 chains for the hotly contested deck. The format was a lot of fun. I loved playing with new decks, but it was a good to feel like you had a little bit of choice over the decks you got. What the most interesting was the mix of people. On the plus side, there were a lot of people like me who were attending their first event. Some of these people barely played the game before, while many others, including myself, had played the game a few times with friends. This gave the event a more relaxed, welcome feel than many Magic events I've attempted to participate in, making sure that everyone knew, and the store owner made sure everyone knew exactly what would happen next. So I think that I want to explain the chains. So we mentioned 7, 8, or 9 chains. If you're not, haven't played Keyforge before, chains are a way of handicapping the decks, and the more chains you have, the less cards you draw for a certain number of turns. So if you have 9 chains in a deck, you're going to be drawing 2 or 1 less card at the end of each turn, which severely handicaps really powerful decks. So this is an interesting format. I have not played in the blind bidding format yet.
I think it sounds super interesting. My guess is, so it's a sealed auction format. So I'm guessing they just open the boxes and you can see the card list.
Yep.
And then you bid. Yeah. I think this sounds really interesting. I would do one of these. I don't know if I like it quite as much as the just plain sealed, open it up and play. You have 15 minutes, then go. But I think this, it like adds a little bit of, if you know what you're doing, maybe you have a little bit of insight, but you're handicapping yourself. I think it sounds really cool.
I think it sounds really cool. And the interesting thing, I'm interested to know from you guys, whether you think it would be more advantageous to take a big heavy hit on the chains and have, say, 8 chains, but getting the best deck. Do you think that would still leave you being like the best player in that tournament? Like, have you got a gauge for it yet as to how much of a handicap that would be, or how powerful a deck can be versus those chains?
So my experience is it is incredibly difficult to judge a deck based on a card list. Every deck that I've opened and sealed, I've looked at it and I'm like, this is okay. And then once I start playing it and figuring out the combos in it, it becomes just a much better deck. I would probably say I would bid 1 chain on a deck and just see what happens. Right. Because if somebody is bidding 9 chains, they are going to be drawing 2 less cards for the first 3 turns and 1 less cards for 6 turns after that. Not technically, because you're going to lose 2 chains in your first turn, but they're drawing a lot less cards. Go ahead, play, pick the deck you think is going to be great. I will play this deck, and it's going to be likely a hidden gem, because every time I open up a sealed deck, there's some kind of hidden gem in there that I can kind of play around with.
Awesome.
there are so many houses that do have like these synergies that kind of work together. You almost end up with a certain combo from any random deck. But if you're looking for something like some of these really rare cards, like a Bear Flute or a Horseman deck or something like that, this might be a way like, hey, I'm going to bid all these chains. I'm going to lose this tournament, but I'm going to walk away with a pretty cool deck. Yeah. So that's another way to look at it.
Yeah, I was thinking about that for this because someone could bid like, okay, you open up a double Horseman deck, which is a super rare deck that you could get. And they bid immediately 24 chains, which is the most you can, unofficially, it's the most that you can bid. And they're going to take that deck home. But what I really want to do is say, okay, anyone who goes 0-3, you lose your deck, but we give you another a blind deck in its place because your deck was terrible. It obviously didn't win anything. So you return that to the store and you get a blind deck instead. That would keep people from bidding crazy amounts of chains to grab these super rare decks because you have to win at least once to take that deck home. I think that'd be kind of fun. But I think if you had a double Horseman deck, someone would just kind of take it and walk out the store.
Yeah, you'd run with it.
So again, for reference, the double Horseman, it's the only deck that's sold. Well, there is a double Horseman deck that sold for $2,000 on eBay. So since then, none of them have sold for more than like $300, but that's still a crazy amount of money for one deck that you could come across. All right, let's go to a new topic.
All right, on to organized play. Eric writes in, one of the things I love about organized play is meeting new people. I like doing organized play events, not really for some kind of swag, but to play a game or more for the community aspect of gaming. That's how I got most of my gaming friends. I look at OP events as a way to learn a game and maybe one you don't normally don't have access to. In my most recent organized play event, the game was a cooperative one that we had to work together, and I only tried the game once before with not so good experience. The second try went better, meeting new people and now understanding the game enough that we went for it and brought it home.
Yeah, Eric is now, so he was a listener for a while, and he just happens to live relatively close to me, and he is a regular attendee of the Gift of Game. So he's now kind of like part of my gaming group. We play KeyForge on Friday nights. And the event he's talking about here is an Arkham Horror Living card game that Sydney and I were running. So we set up a night. We had two different tables. It sort of was the catalyst to the organized play topic in general. But yeah, it was a lot of fun because I met a lot of people that I had never knew before. And a lot of people got to play Arkham Horror for the first time. They were curious about it. And now they have they're starting up a regular Monday night Arkham Horror card game that they're going to meet at the store and play through the campaigns on Monday nights there. So this is just a kind of a great way to get a group together. I think the Monday night's unofficial, but it's like they're just reserving a table and playing now. So it's really cool.
Yeah, I think I could see myself like giving a KeyForge organized play a go if there's any in kind of the city of Chicago, because I think that'd be a great way for me to learn. Like, it'd be nice to have that kind of social aspect as well, and have like a bigger group of people around to kind of pick people's brains and just get to know people as well. Be nice.
Yeah, if you're in Chicago, in Chicago proper, check out the Dice Dojo. It's right off the Red Line and the Bryn Mawr stop. So Josh, that's actually a straight shot for you.
Yeah, easy peasy.
All right, another new topic.
Indeed, we have introverts and extroverts, and we have Nicole Sharon, I hope I'm not butchering that. I'm kind of a Myers-Briggs junkie, she says. And I listened to it and wanted to let you guys know that if you want to take this a step further, you should actually take the Myers-Briggs inventory. And I know mine, but I think, Kitty, you know yours as well, right?
I do. I already had mine. I just thought we would start with the first letter and maybe move on from there. And Nicole actually guessed all of ours. So I'm excited to see if she's right on Sydney and Chris. But she gave me two choices and she got it right on one of her guesses. I am an INFJ, which is known as the advocate. It's very rare, but I feel like they tell every personality type, like, oh, this is very rare.
Yeah. There's like a 1 in 16 chance that you're this.
I actually really got into the Myers-Briggs when I first, well, I can't remember exactly when, but I around the time that I first met Gloria, I was like, oh, have you seen this thing? She was like, yeah, I'm in ENFP. And I'm like, oh, I'm in ENFP too. And we're like,
should have guessed exactly that you were an ENFP, because that is what Fred is as well.
You go. Yeah, I think it's something like the Inspirer or something like that.
You inspire me.
Did Josh. You take it, Chris?
I took it twice. So I took it once in college. And then about 10 years later, I took it again. And that was over 10 years ago. And I was a little bit different between college and later. So your personality types can change a little bit. It wasn't significantly mm-hmm. different, but it was different. So I do need to take this again. And she sent us a kind of an abbreviated test. So one of the things that we've been talking about and toying with, and we've had a few people write in and offer, is kind of matching your personality types with the games that you like. So what I want to do is come up with a way that we can say, okay, put in your Brixton or Myers-Briggs test.
Brixton. I can tell you're about to have a kid with Braxton Hicks over there.
I was
going to
say Braxton Hicks test. Put in your Myers-Briggs test results and then choose what types of categories of games you like. You know, what are your favorites? What do you really not like doing? And seeing if there's a correlation between that. And if you're like, oh, okay, so... Because it's sort of interesting marketing material and just kind of in general. So we might, I still have a subscription to SurveyMonkey. So at some point when I have a little bit of time, maybe next month or the following, I will put this survey together and see what we can get out of this. So it should be fun.
All right. Sorry, I gave you a lot of reading here.
I know. All right. Trevor. Trevor is one of our favorites. So Trevor sends us these super long emails and I love reading them. We rarely put all of them online because it would be we could do an entire podcast just on his emails. So Trevor is talking about he is an extrovert and he plays with his son who is an introvert. So Trevor has a number of kids, and they are kind of follow the gambit of different personality types. But he says, I'm trying to get him to smile and engage in conversation so I can see he's enjoying the game. As an extrovert, the social signals I tend to send, words or affirmative afters, laughter, etc., tend to be overt expressions in one form or another. Because that's the social language I speak, it is also the social language I naturally listen for. And I try to get others to speak. Harrison, his son, the introvert, though, is thinking through the game. He might give me a wry smile, but he's really hoping silently that maybe dad will get quiet so that he can take so thought can take place. We both want the other to speak our social language. So I think what's interesting here is it's tricky to when you don't communicate on the same level. Introverts and extroverts talking to each other, when you're not, you don't talk the same language. You don't understand. So when extroverts try to make introverts communicate the way they communicate, it doesn't work, right? There's some broken barriers there. I don't know. What do you think?
I'm excited for our episode that we do on how does your love language influence the games that you buy. Have you guys read that book yet?
No.
I'll have to get you that one. What is your love language? Your five love languages.
But yeah, I actually had this experience with my younger brother because, you know, we're always really close growing up, but he is totally an introvert and I'm totally an extrovert. And so there was always this like tension between us because I'd always want him to like say more, do more. I'm like, hey, come and do this like outgoing thing with me. And he's like, no, I don't want to. And I'm just like, come on. So yeah, I totally get this. It's kind of, you know, we're kind of like speaking past each other a lot.
Yeah. And well, it's interesting because, you know, what an extrovert expects, what they extrude when they're having a good time is very different than what an introvert will do. So you want these social cues to make sure everything's going well, but maybe everything is going well. You just don't understand the language the same way. So,
and in fact, you might make it worse by assuming that they're not having a good time, being like, oh, I better like hyper engage with them to make sure they're really having a good time. But you don't need to do that because they were already having a good time. And now they're like, why are they hyper engaging with me?
Exactly. So this is, I think, probably one of the most feedback we got on an episode.
Oh, yeah. And we had a ton of feedback.
Yep. So, all right, let's go on to the next one because we picked a few. If we didn't pick yours, don't be mad. There's just so many.
All right, Tim, he says, I've always struggled with this question. After assuming I was an introvert for most of my life, learning the gain or lose energy definition a few years ago rocked my world. I've always struggled with somewhat crippling shyness, but realize I totally get energized in a group setting with friends. Like Sydney, I never want to stop and end up talking about a group event energetically days later. Yet, I only put myself in such group settings a couple times a month. So maybe I should use my disdain for social deduction games as proof of me being an introvert after all. Who knows? We're putting the link to the test in the show notes so everyone can go take the test and there will be no more questions.
Find out what you are. That's the power of this. Yeah, I mean, I'm kind of in the same boat. Like, I really do enjoy like a fun group event, but I'm really hesitant to go to these group events. Like just walking in the door and initially creating those conversations is very difficult for me. But once I get past that, I'm totally fine. I can be totally social. And of course, you know, with my friends, I'm the center of attention, right? Which is kind of one way you can figure out whether or not you are shy or outgoing or not, I think, is if it's around strangers, but you still get energy from being around them eventually, you're probably extroverted, just shy. And when you're with your group of friends, if you're just instantly like, blah, 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 you need to be the person who's talking all the time, you're probably an extrovert. Again, just shy because you're not shy around your friends. All right. You guys have any comments on that?
No.
Excellent. I like when I'm the center of attention. So Eric commented... he says, I've noticed something with my girlfriend, who I have no doubt is an introvert. She has an easier time talking to people who are the same sex than the other. There are exceptions, like she knows them already, or she goes into, as she says, customer service mode to talk to them, and it drains her. So basically, if she's talking to women, she's totally fine. Talking to other people is draining unless it's actually for a mission. She says, also, it scares her to death to talk to the good player in the group. And then Eric wonders, are guys intimidating? And Kitty, I'm curious about what you feel about this.
Well, as our token girl, I have total insights into all women's opinions on this. So allow me. I have no idea. I do understand the good player thing. I have a hard time if I sit down, especially to a game that I'm new at, feeling like, oh no, I have to talk to the good player. Like that can be a bit intimidating. And I do think some, like there's a dynamic between men and women where men tend to be more intimidating. And I think in a hobby like board gaming, there is a lot of the men have dominated for a long time. So it seems like they have more of the good player roles. Although I have found a lot of tables where the person who's the good player at the table is the girl. So I don't know. I think it goes a little bit both ways. I think, though, that it can be just having something in common with somebody. And that's a really easy way to tell, like, oh, you're a woman. I have something in common with you. That is at least one thing that we have that we can definitely make a conversation about.
I also think that personally, I find it easier to interact with girls at the table as well. Guys in gaming can be intimidating. I actually do think. Now, it's not like every guy is intimidating, but typically speaking, if you have that one alpha player or that person who knows all the rules or that person that's hyper competitive, it tends to be someone like, I don't know, the way that guys can carry themselves can be overbearing. And I don't like that either. Like when I see that, I actually get kind of, I don't want to say tense, but maybe spiteful. I love beating someone who thinks they're the bee's knees. Like, I'm so good. It's like, okay, great. I don't actually want to interact with you, but I'm going to interact with you long enough to prove you wrong. I actually enjoy doing that. But yeah, I think guys are jerks.
Yeah, well, I think on average, and this is the thing, women tend to be better at having emotional intelligence. And so maybe that's part of it. That would be my only comment, is that's what I find. And so, yeah, I've often found it easier to talk to women in that sense as well. So,
yep. Yeah.
It's a thing. So we also have Jesse Wachowiak, who says, sometimes having a gamer group that involves strong extroverts can tend to shut down the introverts. I had one gaming group of about 6 to 8 people, and there was one extreme extrovert who was also an alpha player. I ended up leaving that group because it got to a point where it just wasn't fun playing with him anymore.
Yeah, I think this kind of plays back to what we're talking about with Trevor, where you can get into a point where the extrovert really needs to be aware of what's going on at the table and be aware that you're the extrovert. You're the one that's kind of dominating the table, and you have to take a step back and let other people, even other extroverts, have a part to that. Otherwise, you can really destroy a gaming group really fast.
On the other hand, don't assume that because the introverts are taking a back seat that they're not enjoying themselves. I find sometimes that like the person at the table who's like, oh, I'm being an extrovert and dominating the conversation, I should really take a step back, I'm putting you on the spot. Yeah. And that's like, ugh, I did not want that. I was not ready for that. Like, I don't want everyone looking at me right now. Like, don't shut somebody down if they're trying to insert themselves into something, but also don't put somebody on the spot if they look like they're not ready for it. Or if you put them on the spot and they like get that panicked face, just or not, let's move on. Like, give them an out. Because seriously, that's my least favorite.
Yeah, I will try to tend to like ask the table. It's like, oh, I've been doing a lot of talking. Does anyone else have any ideas or thoughts? You know, and kind of back away and see if anyone wants to step up into that. But yeah, it is a tricky thing. Reading the table, reading the room is one of those skills that it just takes time and practice and kind of putting yourself in the other person's situation and saying, if I didn't want to talk, if I didn't know any of these people, would I want to be called out here? You know, it's that kid that's called on in class who just really doesn't want to answer the question. Whether they know the answer or not, they just don't want to talk. You can't keep picking on them because that's not going to be a good way to keep that person engaged.
All right. And then to wrap up our introvert extrovert section of feedback here from Gerza's Not, I'm going to say. This is obviously from BGG. This addresses my main concern with joining game groups at my local game store. I really would like to join and play regularly. However, whenever I'm at the store, the game sounds way too competitive, or based on the conversations and attitudes, they don't sound like people I would want to play with. I'm not very good at starting conversation, but I can maintain a conversation when provoked. Psychology sucks.
It does. Again, this is one of those things where it is hard to walk into a store, especially like an open gaming night. I avoid open gaming nights like the plague, because trying to find a group of people you want to play with and then agreeing with strangers on the game you should play, that's hard enough with your own family. And in this situation, it is not easy at all.
I know. This is why we need to implement our Brazilian steakhouse. Put the game out, put the green, we're looking for players, flip it red, we're playing too late, wait for the next round system. That it needs to be there. I'm so excited about it. I'm going to start making coasters or something.
Yeah. Players wanted, teachers wanted. Like, it just makes it so much easier to walk up because you know already what it's kind of the group saying,
it's
hey.
Setting the expectation. Yep. You know what you're getting into. You don't have to make that like awkward, like, oh, I'm going to do no. Oh, okay. I'm just going to walk away then. Sorry. Like, it eliminates that part of the conversation.
I want to say that some conventions do this already pretty well, right? There's that whole like a big table section where there's tables and people do this exact thing. Am I right?
Yeah. Yep. And those are some of the better like open gaming conventions where you can walk around and oftentimes they'll put like yellow or orange traffic cones with a sign in there saying players wanted and this is the game we're playing, and you can just walk up, and if that's there, it's an invitation to say, okay, at least I know what game I'm playing and I can sit down and join this group of people. I don't know the people, but I don't actually have to talk to them either. I simply walk up and say, oh yeah, I'm interested. Okay, here's a seat, have a seat, and now we start playing. So the other thing you can do, especially at like a game store, if you really want to play games at a game store, talk to someone who works there and say, hey, I like this open gaming thing you have going. Do you ever take like, you know, reservations for a game? I would like to play game X. And, you know, is there a list or something that we can put up so then people know that that's what I'm going to want to play and people can sign up for it or something? Because it's really easy, or at least a lot easier, to say, we're going to play, you know, Terra Mystica at 3:00 and we need 3 players. And you just show up and that's the game you're playing. And there's no questions asked. It's just, all right, let's play this game now. I don't know where Terra Mystica came from, but it's the first one that came to my mind. I really need to play the Gaia Project. All right. Next topic, just because we need to move on, is our $250 game collection challenge. Now, this was a favorite of ours, I think. It's like spending money. And
I love spending imaginary money.
Exactly.
Love it.
I still have my wish list put together. I'm like, I could do this.
Same.
I have most of the games on that list. I think I may have all of the games on that list if I go back and think about it. But all right. So our first bit of feedback was from Christy. She says, I think it is always worthwhile to think about the roles that games are playing in your collection and consider weeding stuff if you have too many games in one category.
That's interesting, because I actually don't necessarily agree with this, but that's because I think of my style is very different. I think Christy maybe is the kind of person that does want a well-rounded collection, whereas I'm like, if I have all of the greatest party games and outdoor kind of yard games, dexterity games in the world, that's fine with me. And like, if I'm just heavy on those, like, I'm like, yeah, I'm good to go. This is great.
I think it's interesting because your collection's relatively small, and so it's targeted to the things that you like. And I think as collections grow, the focus of them can change a little bit. I kind of, you know, equate this to my movie collection. I have almost 400 movies on iTunes right now. A lot of those movies I don't like, but I own them because they were on sale, and I know that some of my friends do. So if we're all sitting around, it's like, oh, let's watch a movie. I like having a large selection to for people to choose from. But if I had a small collection, if I only had like, you know, 10, 15, 20 movies, I'm going to want those to all be things that I personally like because those are the only things I have to choose from. So I think it definitely is size dependent on your collection for this.
Yep.
All right. We've got some feedback from Anne Reynolds. Oh, this is my favorite kind of feedback. She says, I'll support Kitty in her decision to go with Carcassonne. Excellent game and one of the first ones I repurchased for my collection after I had to start rebuilding a couple years ago. I don't think I've played it more than once since then, but it's still a must-have as far as I'm concerned. And my preferred expansions are Traders and Builders and Inns and Cathedrals.
Go figure. Those exactly are the expansions that are available on the Switch, which is...
No.
What?
They're not.
I thought Inns and Cathedrals.
No, it's the River and the Abbot.
Oh, right. But Inns and Cathedrals you can buy as downloadable content.
Yes, you can buy that one for $6.99.
Yes. So,
don't know why that number stuck in my head.
So if you haven't listened to Dice Tower News, another shameless plug, one of the things we talked about is Carcassonne is now on the Switch. And
I've been playing it relentlessly.
Yep. And apparently in the next month or so, they're going to release it. So it has pass and play multiplayer right now, or at least in the same room multiplayer, but they're going to be adding network multiplayer. And when they do that, I will have a copy on my Switch. Kitty will have it on hers. And we will play Carcassonne network style on the Switch. And I will say
that's pretty cool. That's a great innovation. I hope that, you know, more and more board games start coming to these consoles. I think that's such a cool thing. I know, you know, Gloria's niece, who's 13, has a Switch. So I'd even consider getting one so I could just play them, you know?
Yep.
Seems great.
Yeah.
That was my Christmas present.
Yeah.
Yeah. I hope it does very well because I want to see more board game ports to the Switch. We have a lot that come to like mobile and stuff like that, which is important because honestly, mobile phones, everyone has one of those in their pocket. But once it starts going on the Switch, and I guess that's sort of the hot one right now, but it's almost as if it's mainstream when it's on the Switch, right? So I'm totally. Fingers crossed that more people do this, and I kind of expect to see more and more of this basically analog going to digital conversion.
How great would it be if you could play KeyForge on the Switch?
I would.
Oh my God.
I really need Fantasy Flight to do an official online version of KeyForge. Not that the Crucible isn't great. It is, especially for one person coding it. Just Fantasy Flight, go hire him. Put some great graphic treatment on there, some cool user interactions and stuff, and let's just get this done.
Yes.
Nice. All right. So we have Corey who says, I also misunderstood the prompt when I first commented in the main thread. And apparently everyone did because Chris did a bad job.
Blah.
But he says, but that's okay. I still stand by my statement of TI4 and a ton of Pringles, which is Twilight Imperium 4, I believe.
Yep.
And he says, so I can host a single huge game day. BYB, of course. I will commend Kitty, as she was the only person who put Carcassonne on her list. To me, this game just seems as close to a non-negotiable as it could possibly be. I also agree with Chris on Viticulture.
They're both really good games. I mean, you can't go wrong. I actually, like, when Chris said Viticulture, I was like, maybe I need to add that to my list, too.
I really, really like Viticulture. And I will say Carcassonne is one of those games where I could teach anyone how to play it, mostly. My biggest problem with Carcassonne being it's a gateway game, but trying to explain how the scoring works to someone who's not into games can be a bit of a task.
Honestly, if I'm teaching it the first time, sometimes I just won't do the fields. Like the roads, the cities, those are all really straightforward, but the fields, you don't get your piece back. You have to kind of guess. They often end up being combined and it's who has the most people there. It can be a lot to take out. So you play it once and then go, all right, now we're going to add this other additional rule because that's how it's really played. But now you know how the rest of it works. So yeah. It makes a little bit more sense.
Yeah, I think if I think back, the first time I played Carcassonne, I tried to figure it out. I mean, it looked like an interesting game, and this was, you know, a decade and a half ago. And the scoring to me, I just could not figure it out for some reason. This is way back before I was into a lot of different games. But that, and I think a lot of people now take it for granted because it's just kind of intuitive. But at the time, it wasn't for me. So maybe, I don't know. Right now, I think I could teach it fine and be like, oh, don't worry about it. I will teach you the scoring. Just the field just needs to be closed and you're going to get points for it. But don't worry about it right now. So, but yeah. All right. Carcassonne, fine. I would probably, no. I'm going to stand by my thing. But I will take credit for Viticulture. All right, let's go to Christmas questions.
Christmas questions, yes. And Jesse Wachowiak, again, he says, it was great hearing all the excellent questions that listeners gave to you all. I love hearing about Chris's eating contest. This might just be something that I bring to my household next year.
I highly recommend it. Like I say, try it before you have a bunch of other people try it so that you have a general idea and you're not going to make everyone super sick. But we've failed a couple times at that. Nobody's ever actually thrown up, we think, because of the eating contest. One person did get sick, but we think it was unrelated. Of course, it was within a couple hours after, but that's totally coincidence.
Have you already said what you did this year for your eating contest?
This year we did burrito grandes from Taco Bell. They had a special for chicken and beef burritos. They were $1 a piece. So the goal was to eat six of them and top it off with two Twinkies at the end.
Wow.
Five would have been fine. I got to five. I could not eat a sixth to save my life. It wouldn't have gone down. There was no fitting it. Yeah. So
commendable.
But it's a lot of fun. Also, just in relation to the Christmas questions, we have a lot that we didn't answer. And this might be one of those things that we kind of just, you know, a couple of us get together and answer some of these questions and throw them up on the Patreon stuff. Anything that we put on Patreon that's behind, quote unquote, the Patreon wall will eventually get posted live. It's just kind of like a faster way to get people in.
Early access.
Right.
Yeah.
Yep. But it won't be a standard episode. One of the nice things with having Fridays free again on our feed is we can start bringing back some side chats and bring back a few things that, you know, just kind of extra stuff. And those are the types of things that we'll put on Patreon first, and then maybe a month or so later, release them to the general. It's honestly completely arbitrary. I'm trying to find out some things to give our Patreons like over and above. Kitty has a really good suggestion, and as soon as we can work out the logistics of it, we are definitely going to implement it. So
I'm actually going to give Jesse credit for the idea, so he might be able to guess what it is already. All right, but now it's time to move on to our last topic, our resolutions episode. So Melissa says, I was excited to hear that Chris is a fellow Weight Watcher. I totally agree that it is a lot like a resource management game. I'd never thought about it like that before. Anyway, welcome back to Weight Watchers, Chris. Good luck in the new year.
Yep, so my resolution has already failed.
Oh, no.
Well, only because my Thursdays of January, which is my Weight Watchers meeting, they're all full and babies coming up and stuff like that. But what I am doing right now is January, I said I'm only going to be drinking water and first week is done. No caffeine is tricky. I find that I do sleep better. My afternoon headaches are no longer there, but my overall energy level is much, much lower. So just it's kind of a trade-off, like, but I'm going to keep doing it. I'm just going to continue to drink water for the rest of the month. And I am doing Weight Watchers. I'm just not going to the meetings, but I will be going back to them as soon as I can.
Chris, a little tip for you here, and I don't know if it works for everyone, but someone who was going for the world record for staying awake was using apples. Apparently, apples give you a similar alertness kick that a cup of caffeine, whichever way you take it, does. So give it a go if you're into apples and see if it works for you. That's what I'm saying.
I am into apples. I love Honeycrisp apples. They are the most amazing food that we've ever... We didn't genetically engineer them, but we crossbred them. And there's a great Planet Money episode on Honeycrisp apples that you should listen to. And it's not... The something is about apples of the most delicious apple or something like that. Listen to that episode. It's fantastic. But I'm definitely going to try that because I haven't been eating as many of them lately as I should. So, all right.
Yeah.
New addition.
Give it a go. All right, so we've got Eric Huffman. He says, one of mine for the new year is to play more of the games I have that sits on the shelf still in shrink wrap. I must have bought it for a reason, and with more soon to arrive in the new year from Kickstarter, well, this is sounding like Chris, they need to get played. This also goes for the games I have opened, looked at, but have yet to try. I think, at quick glance, there are just over 20 of them. I don't really know why they haven't been played yet, but I think the opportunity or time is one of the reasons. So I think what I need to do is make the time or set a date for them. Find the people, say, hey, do you want to try this game with me? That's one of my big resolution for the new year.
So my solution to this problem was that I watched Tidying Up on Netflix, and now I got rid of all of the games that I'm not playing, and I have them all in a bag to go put them in Chris's basement to bring to Gen Con this year. And now I don't have any guilt. I said thank you to them.
Yes, that's what I was going to ask. And did you get the feeling of joy for the ones that you kept?
I did. They all sparked joy.
Honestly,
so much joy.
If people haven't seen the Marie Kondo show on Netflix, they need to go watch it, because I thought it was amazing.
I refuse.
It seriously makes you want to organize your drawers. It's so good.
Oh, yeah.
No, I refuse to read the book. I refuse to watch the Netflix thing. I do not want my life to change. I like being a hoarder, and I will continue doing it. Gosh darn it.
So here's the thing about Marie Kondo that's so great, and that is that, you know, it's not you need to have less stuff. It's you only need to keep the stuff that brings you joy. And if every one of those 200 games on your shelves bring you joy, you're allowed to keep them. That's the best part about it. It's just then you go through and you're like, well, I don't need 18 bottle openers. So now I have more rooms to keep my board games where I used to keep bottle openers. I don't think that's what she really means, but that's how I've interpreted it. And I will choose to believe it.
I support that.
I do kind of like that idea. I don't know. Like, so that's one of the things, like one of my resolutions is this year, 10 Kickstarter games. That's it. Total. Terrence actually recommended that we do a podcast on how to pick those 10 Kickstarter games. And I'm totally up for doing that. It's just going to be at the other end of the year because I absolutely have no idea how I'm going to do it. Some of it will be like, this is hype. Some of it will be like, wow, this is looks too good to be true. So I'm going to
Oh, is it from CMON?
Some will be like, oh, it's a CMON game. I must have this. But it's like, it's hard to tell. And then also, and I could probably, and Kitty, I apologize because when you had your baby, we just kind of like kept going like nothing happened. But I think I really want to do an episode afterwards because what I think now and what I think is going to happen when I have a baby, those are going to be like two different things in reality. And how does that affect gaming life? You know, so for me, gaming is a priority. Not for everybody, that's not the case, right? Especially when you have a child, there's certain things that you have to, time management becomes more important. What am I going to choose to do when I do have those brief moments where I have time to myself? And for me, that will be games because I really enjoy doing that, but still it has to be affected by that. So I think we need to do an episode on how having kids changes gaming habits and like what you can do and how to work around that. And now that we have
two people who can talk to each other about it, it makes way more sense instead of just me being like, help, I need help, guys.
Exactly. It's like so exhausted all the time.
All the time. Well, my baby sleeps now, so it's great.
Yeah, so I just expect him to come out and be perfect and sleep through the night and everything will be fine. Yeah. I don't know. That's how that works, right? I'm laid back. My baby's totally going to be laid back. So
sure.
We'll see. I can hear all of our parent listeners just laughing, rolling on the floor and laughing. It's so good.
Yeah. Well, that's why I wanted to talk about it. So there's so many topics coming up this year. It's going to be a fun year for sure. But Josh, you weren't here last week. So we want to know, what resolutions do you have? Do you have any gaming resolutions? What did we miss by not having you around?
Yeah, I need to get out and do more stuff. I feel like I've left the, you know, nurturing the hobbies a little bit off for a while. I was doing improv for a while. That was cool. I was doing soccer for a while. That was cool. Then I got injured. Improv got too serious. Everyone wanted to be a comedian and they'd be there, you know, their full whole life. So I stopped doing both of those things. So my resolution is to get into something, you know, extracurricular, a couple of things. So I'm going to look around and make sure I do that.
I like it. We actually have a few more minutes. What do we want to fill this with? We've never had this before.
We can hold me accountable. I've walked the dog today and yesterday. I'm doing so good on my resolution.
Nice.
So, yay.
Nice, nice. Yeah.
So yours is to walk the dog more or just walk more?
It's part of my being healthier. So I'm trying to take the dog out for walks more so that I'm healthier and the dog is getting more exercise and we're seeing more of our neighborhood. We're in the new neighborhood. And I feel like I'm always really good in the summer about being out and being active. But in the winter, it's like, no. So trying to maintain that through the winter is tricky.
Although this winter is supposed to be one of the warmest on record ever. So it's like
for Chicago.
Yeah. It's January and it's like in the 40s, which is really warm for.
Yeah. Well, I was looking back last year because I know that, you know, winters get really cold here. And it was about middle of February. I was literally like a real nerd looking through the weather. And like the middle of February is when it stops being below zero during the day. Like you just didn't see it after the middle of Feb. So I'm like, are we going to just go the whole winter without really going below zero much at all? Like, this is so weird.
Yeah, I don't know if you guys remember
the polar vortex. Do you remember the polar vortex? That was all of February. When all of February was like negative 20 degrees 4 years ago or whatever it was. Okay. That was miserable.
Yeah.
You never know with Chicago.
Yep. So, all right. So, we've definitely totally gone off the gaming rails. This is what happens.
This is it, Chris. This is it, Chris. I always tell you, killer, not filler. We should not attempt this again.
Well, so we go through the feedback and we're like, okay, we think we can get through this much in an hour. This should be good. And then every once in a while, we get through it a little. Well, not every once in a while. Apparently, this time we got in a little bit faster. So, Kitty, next time you do the notes, also great job on the notes.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, I streamlined them too well.
Yeah, no. Yeah, you just want to get in and out.
Too good a job. What can I say?
I'm okay with it. 50-something minutes, I'm cool with that, you know? Like I said, killer, not filler.
That's true. Now, we do have one other thing to take care of. This is a feedback episode. I don't remember if I said one or two, because I might have said two for how long we've had.
I have no idea what we're
doing. It's going to be one.
So,
but it's one winner.
All right, it's one winner. We've made the decision. All right, so one winner. I have given away, let's see, $350 in the last three episodes. So this winner, there's going to be one winner. It's $50. You can choose Amazon or Cool Stuff, Inc. You just have to email me and let me know. You can also, if you are a BGG winner, you can hit us up on BGG as well. Just send me a geek mail, and I can do it that way as well. So the winner this time by Google spreadsheet something or other, blah, 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 is Patrick Foster. Patrick, you have won $50 in our feedback giveaway funness.
Woohoo!
Good job. Hooray!
Excellent work.
Congratulations. Yes. Excellent work.
So we will do this again. Now that the holidays and the special episodes and all that stuff is done, this will be a little bit more regular again. We'll do every three or four episodes. I think this one was five, but in any case, we did give away a lot of stuff in those five episodes, questions and resolutions and all kinds of cool stuff. We like giving stuff away. One of the ways we do that and are able to do that is through Patreon. And like I say, we're reworking how Patreon works and what we provide our patrons. But if you are interested in supporting the show, if you want us to, you know, murder your name at the end of every episode, check us out. That's tabletopgametalk.com/Patreon. That's P-A-T-R-E-O-N. And we have a number of levels. There's a 2, 4, 8. And then our highest level, which are our friends of the show. And I don't think we can actually fully give the amount of appreciation necessary for our friends of the show. They
are amazing.
They are amazing. Yeah. They support us at a level more expensive than Netflix, and we're not as good as Netflix.
Hey, no.
We're more personal than Netflix. We read out their names, at least.
We do. We are. But, like,
I'll put on a blindfold and wander around a forest with my children.
All right. that works.
Love it.
But Emil, I think Emil's been with us since almost the beginning, since we had Patreon.
Pretty much, yeah.
George listened to episode 35. He's like, this is pretty good. I'm going to just support you. I was like, okay. Adam, like, he's also been here forever. The SGC, they made us t-shirts. Like
they did.
They support us and
like nice t-shirts. They're nicer than the Tabletop Game Talk t-shirts.
They are. They're so much nicer. Get a hold of me. Let me know where you got your t-shirts made because I really like the fabric is just like so nice.
It's so soft.
And then Thomas is our newest patron or friend of the show. And I love saying your name. And I think we're still saying it wrong.
I feel like we must be saying it wrong, but he hasn't emailed us back. Yeah. So. Yeah.
So we might be close enough. So Achi ready. But
I'm going to mix it up.
But the thing that's crazy is, so Corey Bell had to leave us and he sent me an email saying, hey, you know, still listen, you know, love you guys, but can't support us, which is totally fine. Nobody is obligated to support us at all. We do this because we love doing it. And within like 2 weeks, Thomas like filled a spot. I'm like, it's incredibly humbling. And it's also why pretty much all of the Patreon money that comes in, it goes for paying for the hosting services, for some processing stuff. The equipment is kind of like a one-time sunk cost, but we really just kind of give it back because that's what I like doing with this. I like making this a community. And I find that if we offer money, people send us feedback. And when we get feedback from you, it makes us love doing this. Like we love reading these emails. We love talking about this and we love hearing from you back. And I know.
And even if it doesn't make it on the show, we read every single one. We'll send out replies. I know I just got to it today. Terrence asked what the podcast is that is making me think I like Pathfinder. And it is The Glass Cannon, in case anyone was curious.
Yep. So, and I just think it is great to have that conversation. So keep doing that. Keep sending us feedback. Keep sending us emails. If
this is the end of our pledge drive, I promise.
Well, it's a new year. Everyone seems to be doing it. But I do know that based on our download numbers and based on the amount of feedback we get, we probably only hear from about maybe 10% of our listeners, which is a lot. But again, you know, it's helpful to give people incentive. And I totally understand that. And I like doing that. So the other 90% of you who don't talk back, we still appreciate you as well. We like those are the listeners where I'm, you know, talking at a convention and someone hears my voice and turns around and is like, hey, are you Chris?
Oh, hey, Chris.
Yeah. It's like, yeah, I've never emailed you, but you know, I listen to your podcast all the time. Like those types of things are amazing.
It's so cool.
Yeah. And if you do communicate with us or not, and you hear us at a convention or whatever the case, come and talk to us because we remember you. Every one of
you. We are huge egomaniacs and we just want to hear from you.
That's true. But we feel like we know you in the same way, especially the more you talk to us. It's like, oh, yeah, I know exactly right. So I think the introverts and extroverts episode was interesting because there are so many introverts, well, self-proclaimed introverts that listen to us. And I would never know that because they're also the ones that communicate with us quite significantly. And that's really cool. It's like a medium where that allows that to happen. So, all right. That was me filling 5 minutes by saying how much I appreciate our listeners.
Yep.
Did that work?
You can't leave time on the clock.
All right. So I said, Patrick Foster, you won. I will announce what conventions we'll be at in the near future. There'll be a couple local ones. We will be at Gen Con and Origins. So if you are at those, we'll give you more details as we get closer. And 99% that will be at Game Hole Con again. Other conventions will depend on babies and babysitters. But in the meantime, you can follow us on Facebook /Tabletop Game Talk Podcast, Twitter @TabletopGameTLK. Kitty is Lawful Good Mom. Josh is Josh's Blonde. I'm Game Master Chris. Also, Kitty, read some stuff.
Oh, Tabletop Game Talk is a proud member of the Dice Tower Network. Thanks for listening. And remember, we love your feedback. So email us with comments or questions about today's topic at feedback@tabletopgametalk.com. And you'll be entered into a $50 gift card drawing on our next feedback episode.
And finally, a huge thank you to our patrons, Emil Jiljam, George, Adam Harrison, the SGC, Thomas Accaretti, Samir Biswas, Jason Strong, Terence Miltner, Stephen Seitz, Michael Ohl, Brian Arnold, Sean P. Kelly, C. Marie, Rudy Liu, Benjamin Heinrichs, Joey Huang, Stefan, Happy New Year, Phillips,
Caleb O'Brien, Jennifer Engelbrecht, Justin Willard, Christopher Dong, Jason Marks, Jeremy Fisher, David Radke, Nick Quickstra, David Sellers, Jason Rodney, Michael Yanikowski, Miles Clark, Cindy Lum, Phil Schwartzel, Jordan Levinston,
Chad Covey, Ann Reynolds, Eric Hoffman, Adrian Dong, Christopher Vincent, Nate Vazwintham, Sean Peck, Eric Solander, Mike Smith, Christian Meyer, Trevor Davis, Wesley Trailer, Tim Verning, Chris Lowe, Joe Hoover, Timothy Gross, Glenn Cutter, Jesse Wachowiak, Barry Peterson, and Ben Gari. Until next week, keep playing games and having fun.
Good night.
Wow, you slipped that in there.
I wanted to see your reaction.
I didn't know what to do. And now I have to keep it in because this is the post-credit banter.
I know, it's in now. I just wanted to see how much it would irk you for me to get the last word in.
Whew, more than I care to admit.